Welcome to Treasures Old and New from ART. Hi, I'm Joy Jackson. I'm going to start off with an episode from the saga I Love a Mystery. It's Terror at Frozen Corpse Lodge, Episode 8.
American Radio Theater presents I Love a Mystery. O'clock in the morning, with the snow drifted almost up to the second-story windows of J. Irving Stark's hunting lodge, high in the Sierras, somewhere on the California-Nevada border. Snowbound in Frozen Corpse Lodge, and more snow falling. And locked in the tool room at the back of the lodge is the corpse of a murdered man, a friend of Gale Stark's, and the fourth man to die in the last month after she had kissed him. Gale had kissed him a friendly goodbye in Reno day before yesterday. He was found by P.O. the caretaker, stabbed and frozen in a snowbank between the lodge and the stable. That is why Jack, Doc, and Jerry Booker are here over the weekend, to find the reason for the sudden epidemic of violent deaths among the young men Gale knows. But why is Mansfield, the aged butler, dead, and by whose hand? Jack and Doc have gathered the whole group together for investigation.
Now then, we've got the whole group together, and I don't want anyone to interrupt my questioning unless he knows positively someone is telling a deliberate lie in answer to my questions.
Oh, the big, big question and answer, ma'am.
Shut up, Garrett. You ready with your notebook, Jerry?
Shoot when ready.
Pio, you and Jones are first.
See?
Yes, sir.
No, turn so you're facing me, Jones.
Yes, sir.
That's better. Now, I want to know exactly how you happened to discover the body of Mansfield.
I did not find Mansfield, senor. These drawings here...
All right. You keep quiet then, P.O.
See?
Go ahead, Jones.
Well, there ain't much to tell, mister. Ian, you know how the snow's drifted up against the house, clean up to the second-story windows?
Yes.
Well, P.O. here said he had to tunnel through the drift so he could get out to the stables and take care of the horses.
See? Horses must be fed and have a drink of water.
Go on, Jones.
Well, I ain't shoveled snow since I was a kid back in Wisconsin, and I thought it might be kind of fun, so I offered to help.
Uh-huh.
So, while Peel was getting wood out of the shed to build up the fires, I started tunneling through the drift, and the first thing I knew, there was the old boy's foot sticking out of the drift.
Oh, poor Mansfield.
And that's all?
That's all.
Peel.
See?
Are you in the habit of letting someone else do your work for you?
Monsignor!
Are you?
Senor Fackard, that is most unfair thing anybody ever said to me.
Just answer my question.
For 2 years, I have been caretaker for this Frozen Corpse Lodge. Is that not so, Senor Stark?
Yes, P.O.
I have been good caretaker. Yes? No?
I've had no complaint.
Have I ever asked anybody to do what is my job to do? No.
You let Jones tunnel through the snow for you.
See? Because he asked to tunnel. Because it make him remember when he was a little boy. But I do not ask him to do it.
Okay.
I don't get what you're driving at, Packard.
Ben, I ask no one to speak unless he knows someone is lying. To your knowledge, is someone lying?
No.
Then keep still.
I still think we have a right to know where your questions are leading.
Gee, I do also.
Jack, you want me to persuade Mr. Ben a little?
No, I'll answer his question. I wanted to know if P.O. put Jones to work on the tunnel deliberately.
Why?
So there would be Jones, and not he, who found Mansfield's body.
But Mr. Packard, that would mean that P.O. knew that Mansfield was there?
Exactly.
Senor, you say I killed Mansfield. You say I put this poor old man out in snow.
Sit down, P.O.
Senor, if you say this thing...
Sit down! Now then, somebody in the lodge here has committed 2 murders. Maybe it was P.O. and maybe it wasn't. But... he's just as much a suspect as Jones, or Ben, or Stark, or Bruce Garrett here.
Or Gale. Hey, Packard.
Bruce, how could you?
Yes, or Miss Stark, if you like.
You You don't think it might be someone outside, someone we don't know about?
Aren't you the man who told me we were utterly and entirely cut off from the outside world?
Yes, I did.
Well, there's your answer to that.
Monsignor, why did you pick on me? Why did you pick on Pio? I am only caretaker.
I'm not picking on you. I'm taking you apart just as I'm going to take everyone else in this place apart. And you'll have to admit, Pio, it would look pretty bad if you'd been the one to discover the body of Mansfield this morning after bringing in Phil Ogden's corpse last night.
Yeah, the guy who always knows where the body's buried.
Ah, I see what you're getting at. A very good point.
But the thing I don't understand is why anyone would want to kill poor old Mansfield. What was the object?
Very good question. Would anyone like to answer that, Miss Stark?
No.
How about you, Garrett?
Don't throw any of your insinuating questions in my direction, Packard. I don't know anything, and I don't want to know anything.
Well, then, I'll have to tell you myself.
You know?
Yes. Mansfield was killed because he had a story of murder to tell me.
What's that?
Yes. He was only waiting for the opportunity of getting to me. He was killed when he was, because he was to have been the next person I was calling into the tap room last night for questioning.
Oh, no.
Amazing.
Somebody deliberately blew the fuses, knowing Mansfield would go to the basement and put in new ones. In the dark, this person stabbed the old man and tossed his body in the snow.
Did you find where it was done, Jack?
Yes, on the first landing going down into the basement, where we found Mr. A.J. Benn a few minutes later.
Is that true? How do you know that's where the murder happened?
Because there was blood on the landing, and there was blood on your coat where you'd fallen down in it. I see you're not wearing the same coat this morning.
No.
No, he's wearing one of mine. He said his coat had been torn.
Uh-huh. In spite of the fact you claim to have been attacked, there was no sign of a cut or abrasion any place on you. Therefore, the blood must have been from Mansfield.
I assure you, I was attacked. Do you think I'd have laid down in a pool of blood on my own account?
You might.
That's nonsense.
No. Perhaps in the dark you didn't realize the blood was there. Or if you murdered Mansfield and it got blood on you in the act, you might lie down in it. Be a good explanation. Anyway, I want a good look at that coat after we finish this.
Well, if you wish.
Now then, before we leave Jones entirely, one more question. You still maintain Mr. Stark here phoned the Great Western Agency in Reno and said he wanted a new butler and the agency sent you?
Yes, and you can bet your sweet life I wish they never had.
And you maintain you didn't put in such a call, Mr. Stark?
I did not.
Okay, that's something we'll never know the truth about until we get back and check with the agency. Now then, Mr. Stark, this is going to be painful, but I've got to know the truth.
Yes?
You told us that Gail is not your daughter, but your stepchild.
Yes.
But you didn't tell us that you have no money in your own right, that every cent you have is in reality Gail's, and that it will be taken from you when Gail marries.
Who told you? This is abominable.
No one told me. I got it out of the papers in the safe in your study.
You opened my safe last night?
The doc did. He's good at things like that.
I'll have the law on you.
Don't bother with that sort of talk. If you're the murderer, I'll have the law on you. If you're not, you'll thank me for doing everything I can to head him off before this is over. You admit your finances are as I state?
Yes.
Then all this lodge, your estate in Hollywood, everything is actually Gail's.
Mr. Packard, you have no right to humiliate my father.
Just a minute, Gail. And that is the real reason why you have taken Gail into your home since her mother's death. Because actually, this is Gail's home, and she is befriending you.
That's not true. Until I marry, Jay Irving has the full use of all the money and property left by my mother.
Exactly the point I want to make. If Jay Irving Stark can keep his stepdaughter from marrying, he will enjoy all his wealth indefinitely.
That is all quite true. But will you tell me why it is necessary to drag out before all these people to my utter humiliation?
Because it's the very best motive in the world to explain the murders of the three young men in Hollywood and Philip Ogden up here.
Hey, wait a minute, Jack. They ain't the guys who are going to marry Gail. There's the boy right over yonder. Mr. Bruce Rotten Spoilt Garrett.
Yeah, the only word of intelligence spoken this morning.
He's the boy what's going to marry Gail, so if Mr. Stark's a-killing off potential bridegrooms, why ain't he giving Garrett 40 whacks?
Yes, Packard, that's a very important question. Why haven't I killed Garrett? who, by the way, is the only man Gail's ever been engaged to in her life.
I don't know yet. There's something ugly here.
Ugly?
Yes. Between you and Garrett.
Ha! Listen to him.
I don't know what it is, but there's something between the two of you that's so rotten it smelled the minute I came into this place. Something nasty and unhealthy, and your stepdaughter, Gail Stark, is being made the goat.
No. No, really.
You're afraid of something. Perhaps you don't know what it is, but it's something that's cast a shadow over you, and you are afraid to talk, because whether Stark loves you or not, you love him. And you'll do anything he wants if he tells you he's in trouble.
No, that's not true.
You'll even go as far as engage yourself to an undisciplined, utterly despicable playboy who shows very definite signs of mental deficiency.
Jack, look out!
Hey! Jerry, you hurt?
Don't move, Garrett. I've got you covered.
The mirror broke right over your head. Are you hurt?
No, I guess not, but I'll be combing Looking Glass out of my hair for a week.
Keep him covered, Ben. What do you throw at me?
Here it is. Pool ball. Well, I'll be doggone if it ain't the black old eight ball itself. Boy, if he'd ever popped you with that old pool ball, you'd have looked mighty sick, son.
Yes. Jerry, there's a little cut on your neck.
There is? Oh, blood!
Miss Stark, take her upstairs and put some iodine and a piece of cotton on it.
Yes, of course. Bruce, you must be insane.
Why, you little smooth-faced two-timing...
Hold it, Garrett.
Come on, Jerry.
Boy, is friend Garrett in a temper.
Now then, everybody sit down. Sit down, Garrett.
I will not sit down and listen to myself continuously being referred to as a madman. I will fight every man in this house. I'll break every piece of furniture in this place before I'll sit down and take what you've been handing out.
Son, you keep on raving like that, and we're going to have to put you in a straitjacket.
Just try it. Just try it.
Look, Garrett, I'll make you a bargain.
Yeah, what?
If you stop all this foolishness and cooperate with us, I'll guarantee that nobody will again mention the word madness, nor any of its synonyms or words of association. Is that fair enough?
I don't believe your word's any good.
How about giving us a try?
Well...
Okay, everybody sit down. Sit down, Jones.
Yeah.
Hey, where's Pio?
Here I am, senor.
What? Where?
We'll all be doggone under the couch over there. Come on out, Pio. War's over.
Yeah, well, for goodness sakes. I am glad about that, you betcha. Ugh. How I get under here? It's so tight a place, I don't know.
Here, I'll give you a hand. Can't have you stuck under the couch. Let's go.
See?
Oh, there you are.
See? My goodness. But you almost pulled my arm off. Did anybody get shot to pieces?
No. No one got shot. Which brings up the point, Ben. What are you doing with a gun?
I always carry a gun.
Uh-huh. Mind if I have a look at it?
Why not?
And about the way you draw that there shooting iron, son, there's only one other hombre I ever seen who could draw a gun that fast from that stance.
That's so?
Yeah, he's from Texas. Real rattlesnake of a guy. I think they got him over yonder there in Alcatraz Island now, if I ain't mistaken.
That's so?
That's quite a gun.
Like it?
Uh-huh. So much, I think I'll keep it for a while.
No.
Yes.
Hand me that gun.
Well, I'll be doggone if he ain't got its mate. Mm. Honest to goodness, two-gun Western man.
Hand me that gun.
With the greatest pleasure.
Thanks. And what makes you think I'm a Western man?
Ain't no son of a gun east of Texas can handle guns like that. No man.
Oh, thanks. Look, Packard, no hard feelings, but I did want my gun back.
Oh, quite all right. Think nothing of it. But there is one thing.
Yes?
I would certainly have liked to have got a description of the man there chasing in that manhunt on the outside.
Manhunt?
Yes, we caught some of it on the air just before all the radios were smashed and the phone line was cut.
Yeah, I wonder who could have done that.
Oh no!
Jack! Doc!
Oh no!
Gail, stop it!
Listen!
Doc! There's another dead man up here! He's lying on my bed!
Oh, a dead man lying on her bed. Now who's crazy?
Thank you.
This has been a presentation of a lost old-time radio show by American Radio Theater. I Love a Mystery was written by Carlton C. Morse. This was Book 25, Terror of Frozen Corpse Lodge, directed by Marge Lutton, assisted by Greg Porter, and produced by Joy Jackson. In our cast, you heard Cole Hornaday as Jack Packard, Reynaud LaBeouf as Doc Long, with Joy Jackson as Jerry Booker, Melinda Maines as Gail Stark, Michael Mokey O'Reilly as Pio, Greg Porter as A.J. Ben and the narrator, Dan Schindler as J. Irving Stark, Kim Turner as Mansfield. Live sound effects by Penny Swanberg and Marilyn Welt. Terror of Frozen Corpse Lodge was originally broadcast on May 22 to June 14, 1951. I'm Pat McNally, whom you also heard as Bruce Garrett and Jones the Butler. This is ART, American Radio Theater.
Up next is a recreation from Ethel and Albert. It's Albert's New Orleans Trip.
CBS Radio presents The Private Life of Ethel and Albert, written by Peg Lynch and starring Esther Geddes McVeigh and Dave Parker. It's the small, trivial incidents in everyday life that make up the private life of Ethel and Albert. For example, Albert often has to go out of town on business, as do so many husbands, and as so many wives do, Ethel pestered him to call up one of her old-school friends and just say hello, something Albert hates to do. Well, he's just gotten back after 5 days in New Orleans. Let's see if he had a good time.
Hi, honey. Ethel, I'm home. I'm home. Ethel?
Hi, dear. I was upstairs and I saw the taxi drive up. Oh, dear.
Oh, honey. How's my girl?
Oh, it's so good to have you home.
Well, honey, it's good to be home.
How was the trip? Here, let me take your coat.
Well, it was fine. It was fine. It was fine. Usual business stuff, you know.
Oh, sure, sure. You look tired. You work too hard. Oh, were the business meetings just endless?
Well, you know, it's not exactly entertainment.
What do they do? Get up and read papers and have slides to show and all that?
Yeah, pretty much. Uh-huh. Pretty much like
well,
that.
Well, you look tired. How was the bed at the hotel?
Well, it was okay. No, I slept fine. Just didn't get enough sleep, that's all.
Well, up late every night.
Yeah, just about.
Well, it was the pillow, probably. Most of these hotels' pillows are made of foam rubber. And you can't sleep on those, you know.
I know.
You would just start traveling with your own pillow. That's what people used to do all the time, you know, travel with their own pillows.
Something that smells good.
Well, I've been cooking and baking. I figured you'd be so tired of hotel cooking after 5 days. But I won't tell you what you're having for dinner. That's a big surprise. But I put some coffee on now and some blueberry muffins. I thought you might like those for a snack right now.
Oh, boy, blueberry muffins.
Come on out to the kitchen. How was the food? Pretty awful?
Well, no, it wasn't too bad.
Sit down. I'll get your coffee. Butter's right here for the muffins. Are you hungry? Do you want some scrambled eggs?
No. Blueberry muffins are just fine. That's all I want.
Oh, it's so good to have you home.
Oh, listen, honey, it's always good to get home.
And there's cream for your coffee, real cream. I'm spoiling you.
Going to make me fat? Well, how did everything go here at home?
Well, oh, that huge warehouse burned down, the one up on Tyler Street?
No, what happened?
They don't know. They think arson.
Anybody hurt?
No, fortunately. Grace Henderson had a hysterectomy.
Oh? How is she?
Oh, she's doing all right. Oh, and there was a terrible, terrible rain and windstorm and a lot of damage done. The Riley Water Tower blew down.
Wow, that's stone. Solid stone.
It blew over and just crushed the Ferris wheel, the one out on the fairgrounds.
Yeah.
Fortunately, the county fair isn't till fall, but...
I certainly never thought that tower would blow over. Boy, all you have to do is go out of town for a few days and everything happens.
Oh, the Wilsons have separated. They're getting a divorce.
The Wilsons?
Yeah, it seems...
The Wilsons? Huh. They've always been held up as having the perfect marriage. They were so in love.
I know. I know.
Is there somebody else?
No, nothing like that, apparently. I saw Lucille in the post office, and I said to her, "Why are you and Walter getting a divorce?"
Yeah.
And she looked at me, and she said, "Oh, I never have liked him." Can you imagine that? I had to laugh.
I thought they weren't devoted to each other.
Well, you can never tell. Now, let's see if there's any other news. The city council passed some resolution about the bypass, but it's going to the voters. I can't think of anything else. I cleaned out the garage.
You didn't.
I know how you hate it, and I thought, your poor darling is down in New Orleans at this boring business convention, so I'll just surprise him, and when he gets home, I'll have that garage all cleaned out.
Hi, that was a terrible job. It was really a mess.
I got the Mulholland boy to help me with the heavy, heavy things. Anyhow, I felt very guilty, and I want to apologize.
Apologize? What for?
Well, I wasn't very nice to you when you were packing to leave.
You weren't? What'd you do?
Well, I do this every time you go on a trip, and I know you hate it. You just hate it.
These blueberry muffins are great. They can't be from a box. Did you do them from scratch?
Uh-huh. Buttermilk.
Oh, honey, they're wonderful. Now, what were you saying?
Well, I do it to you every time. I insist that you call up some old friend of mine and say hello for me. And I know how you hate it. I hound you every time.
Oh, well.
No. I want you to know that I won't ever do it again. In fact, I'm not even going to ask if you called Melanie.
Well, I'll tell you. The minute I got to New Orleans, I did. I called your friend Melanie, and I told her who I was, and I said that you sent your love, and she said she sent you her love.
She's nice, isn't she? Thank you, dear, for phoning her. I know how you hated to do it.
Well, actually, it wasn't too bad. Right away, she said, "Well, I certainly want to meet Ethel's husband."
Oh, nice.
Yes. And then she said, "Why don't you all come right on out to my house for dinner tonight?"
What?
Boy, she got a cute southern accent.
So you went out to her house for dinner?
Yes. Didn't you want me to? Shouldn't I have gone?
Oh, yes, of course. It was nice of her to ask you. I just meant I didn't expect her to go to a lot of extra trouble. I just thought if you called and said hello and...
Honey, you forgot Southern hospitality.
Oh, yes, true. Just surprised. Melanie was always so shy. She had trouble making friends.
She's not shy anymore. She's lively as a cricket.
Well, she certainly wasn't lively in college. She was cute, sort of. She had this southern accent, which, I mean, I think you can kind of get a little tired of accents after a while. So you went to her house for dinner?
Yep, had a great dinner. Just incredible. She's a gourmet cook, honey. I watched her in the kitchen whipping up this gourmet meal and chattering away like a little magpie. Nothing bothers her. And in no time at all, she had turned out this fantastic dinner.
Oh, huh. Oh, lovely. You the only guest?
Yeah, just the two of us.
Well, that was nice.
Yeah. Gave us a chance to really get to know each other.
Uh-huh.
I sent some flowers to her the next day.
Well, that was nice. Well, thank you for calling her. I do appreciate it, and I'll send her a little note, and I'll thank her for being so nice to you.
Yeah, well, I would be nice, honey.
Well, I do appreciate it.
Listen, I'm the one who appreciates it. Your friend Melanie really showed me around New Orleans.
You saw her again?
Oh, yeah, the next day. I felt I should invite her to lunch, so, you know, we had lunch at Antoine's. And, oh, I had the best baked oysters I've ever had in my life. Man, were they good. And then the waiters were coming in with flaming swords with the brochettes of beef. Uh-huh. And it just...
Well, very picturesque.
Oh, it was, honey. And then the convention dinner got canceled because the hotel had electrical problems. No, it was okay because Melanie said, why don't we go over to Commander's Palace for dinner? And I said, fine. Fine. So we did. Honey, I know you always like to know what we had to eat, so I wrote it down right here. Got it in my pocket. Just a second, honey. Melanie had chicken marsala de Pasquale.
Chicken?
Yeah, marsala de Pasquale.
Well, sounds good.
Yeah, she said it was heavenly. And I can't read my own handwriting here. I had shrimp parmigiana rendezvous. The shrimp was sautéed in butter, garlic, and herbs, lemon, and then it was baked with parmesan and mozzarella. And was it good?
Well, as far as I can figure out, you've been there 3 days and all you've done is eat. And with Melanie.
Yeah, that's just about it.
Well, we had a supper at the library after the book fair in the basement. We had chicken, too. Chicken croquettes, mashed potatoes and peas, candle salad, you know, with the pear, the cream cheese and cherry on top, cake and ice cream for dessert, iced tea.
Oh, and for dessert, this guy came in with a flaming bowl of Cherry's Jubilee. Boy, that was really something. Well, the next day was a free day, and, you know, you're on your own day. So Melanie had a boat, so a bunch of us had a trip down the Mississippi Delta. Now, honey, that was really interesting. We were gone most of the day, and for lunch, you know, we stopped at this very, very, very picturesque place.
Uh-huh.
And we had crabs and crayfish that were just out of this world. Some Creole kind of cooking.
Didn't Melanie have anything else to do? I mean, it seems to me you sort of monopolized her time.
Well, that's what I told her. She said, no, honey, it is my pleasure. Ethel's husband is not going to go without seeing old New Orleans and just the loveliest city in the whole wide world.
Did you have a minute or two to attend to your business convention?
Oh, yeah. Oh, sure. But all those boring speeches, you know how business conventions are.
No, I don't think I do. Did you give your speech, the one you worked so hard on?
Sure. I squeezed it in early Friday morning. Had to do it early because Melly had plans to do...
Melly?
Well...
Not Melanie.
Melly.
Melly?
Melly Sue. Everyone down there calls her Melly. Melly Sue. Anyhow, she gave me a tour of the French Quarter, and then we drove out to Oak Alley with this beautiful home with this huge oak trees lining the driveway. Takes your breath away.
Well, I'm glad your week wasn't a total loss. What with just one after another horrid, boring old business convention. And I'm glad you liked Melanie.
You didn't tell me she was a knockout. She's a gorgeous.
Melanie is gorgeous?
She is gorgeous. You haven't seen her for a long time. Did you know that she was once queen of the Mardi Gras?
Melanie Witherspoon was queen of the Mardi Gras?
She was.
Oh, Albert. Melanie Witherspoon was a dear girl. We all loved her. She had a heart of gold, always doing something for somebody else. But she was what you would call a plain Jane.
Well, this plain Jane turned into a butterfly.
Well, I'm glad to hear it.
You haven't heard the best part yet?
No. Tell me the best part.
Saturday. It was Saturday. The last night. Melly Sue was having this huge outdoor party. Barbecue, lots of movie people came from Hollywood, New York. You know, the horsey set.
Movies? You saw celebrities? Who?
Oh, you know me, I never can remember names. Anyhow, the yard was all lit up with lanterns.
It must have been beautiful.
It was, honey. It was. It was lovely with those big trees and the Spanish moss hanging down. It was like fairyland.
That was Saturday. Yesterday?
Yeah. That was just yesterday. Seems like a dream.
Well, while you were in dreamland or fairyland or whatever it was, I was busy cleaning out the garage, lugging out the old tires, trying to clean the grease off of everything.
Oh, honey, bless your heart. That was a job, too.
Yes, it was. But I'm just glad you were having a good time. Well, oh, and how did you like Melanie's husband? I haven't heard a word about him.
I didn't meet him, that's why.
And why not?
He wasn't there. He was in Ireland, buying a horse or something.
Say that again.
He was in Ireland, buying a horse.
All right. That does it. You've been having fun pulling my leg or putting me on, whatever it is you want to call it.
You don't believe me?
Well, no.
Well, what don't you believe?
Any of it. A man going to Ireland just to buy a horse?
He did. That's what horse people do. He and Melly Sue raise horses. Look at this great big stable.
Really? Is that so?
Yes, it is so.
I can see you sitting to yourself. I don't blame you. Oh, I gave you a hard time. Hounded the life out of you to call Melly Sue, as you know her. But if you think for one minute that I'm going to fall for all that.
Call her, honey. Call Melanie. Go on. Give her a call. Go on. Ask her.
Oh, you know I'm not going to do that. How would it look as though I were jealous? Which I am not.
Ethel, would I make something like this up?
Yes, you would.
Call Melanie and ask her.
No.
Okay. Suit yourself. I think my next business trip's to San Francisco. Hey, got any old school friends living there that you'd like me to call?
No. Nobody. Not a soul.
Well, suit yourself. Now, let me see. Got any old friends? Yes, we went through that, didn't we, honey? Okay. Come on. Let's go out and look at my beautifully clean garage, for which I thank you very much. Oh, boy. Travel is great. But, you know, it is good to get home.
Well, it's good to have you home, dear. Honey, did you really call Melanie, huh? Did you?
Well, you better believe I did, because I sure had a good time with somebody.
Oh, Albert!
Great, honey. It's great.
Let's listen to some music from the days of old-time radio.
Cadets with a musical memory of a lovely little lady.
5'2", eyes of blue, but oh, what those 5 foot could do. Has anybody seen my girl? Turned up nose, turned down hose, never had another beau. Has anybody seen my girl? Now if you run into a 5'2" covered with fur, diamond rings and all those things, bet your life it isn't her. But could she love, could she woo, could she coo? Has anybody seen my girl? Thank you.
race picking horses. Here's one I didn't pick for the winner it turned out to be, but you folks did. Don Cornell sings it.
Again, this couldn't happen again. This is that once in a lifetime. This is a thrill divine. What's more, this never happened before. Though I have prayed for a lifetime that such as you would suddenly be mine, mine to hold as I'm holding you now, and yet never so near. Mine to have when the now and the here disappear. What matters, dear, or when? This doesn't happen again. We'll have this moment forever, but never, never again. Forget a merry-go-round we came across at a carnival in Altoona, PA. Chubby, our hefty sax player, wrapped himself around one of those little wooden horses on one side, and everyone else in the band had to get on the other side of the merry-go-round before the owner could get it started. Which brings us right up to the K Choir and another merry-go-round.
Merry-go-round, on the merry-go-merry-go-round, you by my side. While the merry-go music goes round, I haven't a thing, but you know that we're honeymoon bound. When I give you the ring that I win on the merry-go-round,
why should we walk in the park? We're in love and there's music tonight. Why should we kiss in the dark? We can kiss by the carousel light. No need for moonlight above. There's a thrill in the waltz that they play. That's why we're falling in love in our merry-go-round of our play.
There's merry-go-round on the merry-go-merry-go-round. You by my side. While the merry-go music goes round, I haven't a thing, but you know that we're honeymoon bound. When I give you the ring that I win on the merry-go-round. Merry-go-merry-go-round, you by my side, while the merry-go music goes round. I haven't a thing, but you know that we're honeymoon bound.
rare collection of old favorites we call Dusty Manuscripts, there's a section labeled School Days. Here's a tune that was played at the end of our school dances at Rocky River High. It goes like this. I'll see you in my dreams. Hold you in my dreams. Sweetheart, Laura Leslie and Don Cornell, and I'll string along with you.
You may not be an angel, 'cause angels are so few, but until the day that one comes along, I'll string along with you.
I'm looking for an angel to sing my love song true, and until the day that one comes along, I'll sing my song to you.
For every little thought that you have, say I've got three or four.
The human little faults you do have just make me love you more.
I may not be an angel,
but still I'm sure you do.
So until the day that one comes along, I'll string along with you. Little fault that you have, say I've got three or four.
The human little faults you do have just make me love you more.
I may not be an angel,
but still I'm sure you do.
So until the day that one comes along, I'll string along with you. I'll string along with you. I'll string along with you.
Passing left and right at the barn dances back at Rocky River High School, I never thought I'd get a chance to call a promenade right in your living room. But it's about to happen, so Laura Leslie, let's show the folks how we did the Hollywood Square Dance and our latest Victor record.
In Hollywood, the latest craze will make you want to dance for days. So grab your partner, take a chance, try the Hollywood Square Dance. It's as easy as can be. You do it once and you will see. You square your shoulders and advance. Try the Hollywood Square Dance. Bring around the rosy, park some cozy, watch a little toesy as you go round and round and round underneath your tee.
foot with your left hand. Back to your partner, right left brand.
Back from Cozy.
Swing grandma across the hall. Chase and swept and sway last fall.
Watch a little Cozy.
Chase that rabbit, chase that squirrel. Chase that pretty girl round the world.
And you go round and round and round underneath your arches. Careful of your arches. Everybody marches. One, a two, a three, a four. Now, if at first you don't succeed, just try again. That's all you need. And soon you'll find your big romance doing the Hollywood square dance.
The other night, I found a tune I thought you might like to remember along with us. A ballad as beautiful as the Silver Anniversary Chrysler. It's Jerome Kern's lovely All the Things You Are.
Maisie mine. I'll cherish thee, dear, through light and darkness, through all time to be, and pray his love may make our love divine.
Envy a millionaire. Chances are that he walks around and envies me. Fiddly-dee, fiddly-dye, joy is a thing you never qualify. Don't ask yourself why. Be happy singing fiddly-dee, fiddly-dye. Fiddly-dee, fiddly-dye, fiddly-dye. Fiddly-dee, fiddly-dee, fiddly-dye, fiddly-dye.
Husky Don Cornell once won a middleweight boxing title in high school. Maybe that's why he put so much punch into a ballad. Take this one that he sings with the Cadets, for example.
I love you so much, it hurts me. Darling, that's why I'm so blue. I'm so afraid to go to bed at night, afraid of losing you. I love you so much, it hurts me. And there's nothing I can do. I want to hold you, my dear, forever and ever. I love you so much, it hurts me so. I love you so much, it hurts me. darling, that's why I'm oh so blue. I'm so afraid to go to bed at night, afraid of losing you. I love you so much, it hurts me, and there's nothing I can do. I want to hold you, my dear, forever and ever. I love you so much, it hurts me so.
With luggage labels from hotels in cities as far apart as Old Orchard, Maine and Appleton, Wisconsin, a traveling band collects quite an assortment of favorite songs. We call our collection Dusty Manuscripts. Here's one of those tunes that time has treated tenderly. These foolish things remind me of you.
That's all I've got time for today. Please check out our website, www.americanradiotheater.org, and have a listen to some of our podcasts. You know, we put up a new one every month. For 12 hours of old-time radio listening, stop by radiooutofthepast.org for their next marathon,